come to order. We'll be discussing a couple bills related to the transportation omnibus bill. We'll start with Senate File 1147. Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 1147 is a bill that authorizes or allows the MnDOT to implement a program that that allows them to use construction managers and general contractors. And this is an agreement over a long period of time that hopefully will add some efficiencies to our contracting program for MnDOT and for our contractors and allow them additional flexibility in how we do projects in the state of Minnesota. And also there are some reporting provisions in here that allow us as legislators to track the progress of this this program. I think what we will do is start with our testifiers and have them go over the bill and give you an idea of what the agreement is here that they have come to on this proposal.
All right. Who do you want to start with?
Sure. My name is Tom Raven. I'm the state construction engineer for MnDOT.
And Mr. Raven.
I thought what I'd do here is just, it's been a year since I think this committee heard the bill. I would just refresh everyone's memory what construction manager general contractor is. Really what we're looking for is another tool in our toolbox. CMGC stands for construction manager general contractor. In addition to our bread and butter, which is design bid build, which we do the majority of our projects, which that's not going to change. We also do design build. We've had that authority since 2001. We're looking to get this authority for CMGC, limited authority for 10 projects. And really what it is a hybrid between design bid build and design build. In design build, we put a lot of risk on the contractors. This particular, particularly the design, CMGC, we would hire, either MnDOT would be, do the design or we would hire a consultant to do the design. And at the same time, we would hire a general contractor, bring a general contractor on for phase one, which would be to consult during the design, help us with constructability and issues, contract input. We talk about times, how long does it take to build, what are the means and methods of building the project, what is the staging. We'll be looking for innovation from the contractor. And really what it will help us do is eliminate a lot of risk. We're looking to do projects that are not your everyday projects. They're kind of complex, unique projects where we may not have the expertise at MnDOT, our engineers, to do it. So, and I'll give you some examples at the end of my testimony. So phase one, we would hire that contractor. They would be on board during the design of the project. Once we got to a certain percentage complete of that design, we would negotiate a contract with that contractor to build that project. And so that may be a guaranteed maximum price, or there will be other ways that we could set up to handle that pricing. It doesn't have to be that. So, and then if no agreement was reached with them, one of the big changes from last year, we would allow them to bid the project. We'd put it out, design bid build or design build, and we would allow that CMGC to bid on the project as well. That's one of the big changes from last year. So with that, I think I'd just like to highlight a few other of the changes, what's happened since last year. Since last year, we have had a process where we worked with AGC, ACEC, the FHWA, and we've also conferred with our Department of Administration on authority that they got early in 2000. We think we got a much better bill. We really appreciate working with AGC, and like I said, I think it's a much better bill. So some of the changes that we've made, and these are consistent with our design build changes that we made a couple of years ago, we have the ability to shortlist in choosing that CMGC. They submit their statement of qualifications. Once we announce the shortlist, those that SOQ statement of qualification evaluation manual, how we evaluate the teams and the actual evaluations themselves will become public so that the contractors can see, you know, how did we select them, so kind of add some transparency. That's a big change. That's consistent with design build. Also, as I mentioned earlier, if you're not able to negotiate a contract with the CMGC, we're going to allow them to bid on the job. In order to maintain a level playing field, the amendment also provides that any information that we provided that CMGC, we have to provide to all other potential bidders, which is only fair. Another change, regarding reporting, I think last year we had, I think it was up to 15 projects. This bill here is a total of 10 projects. The bill, the amendment requires an interim report after 5 projects, and then also a final report after 10 projects. And just to finish out, just in anticipation of maybe some of the questions you may have, you know, what type of project would we use this on? And probably the best example I can think of is a project that was actually led as a design build project a couple months ago, and that's the Maryland Avenue Bridge over 35E. And that's an example of accelerated bridge construction where we're going to build the bridge right next to the freeway and in that interchange in one of the quadrants. We're going to build it there, and then we're going to move it into place over a weekend. And that type of technology requires some special engineering and some self-propelled modular transports, which is basically a crane with a bunch of wheels on the ground. And we've not done it here. They've done it in Utah. We don't know the technology. So that would have been a great project where we could go back and forth with the contractor with the idea of eliminating risk. You really want to eliminate risk with CMGC. We only want to pay for the work that we need to do. You know, when contractors have risk on projects, they handle that by putting money in their bids to cover that. So we're trying to eliminate that, and by doing that, we think we're going to save some money. So we thought that would be a good job. Also, these intelligent work zone systems on our projects, we've got major projects. Maybe some of you have been driven on 35 last year with all the construction there on the way up to Duluth. We've got these intelligent work zone systems for, like, travel time, you know, stop traffic ahead, and the zipper merge and some of those things. The technology is moving so fast in that area that we don't always know how to design those things, and they seem to get changed. And so if we could work with a contractor on the front end of that and have it going before the project starts, that would be a huge advantage as well. So with that, I'll just end and stand for any questions you may have.
Members, any questions for Mr. Raven? Senator Yemsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Tim Werke is here with the ACG group that also worked on this this project and helped to come to this agreement, and I'll have him testify as to their involvement in it.
Mr. Werke.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Tim Werke, representing Associated General Contractors. Mr. Chairman, I'm here today to provide my support and our organization's support for Senate File 1147 as presented. We believe it will provide the department with an appropriate project procurement and delivery model that will be beneficial for both the construction industry and for Minnesota taxpayers. As Mr. Raven said, and we would like to equally as well applaud the partnership that we engaged in with the department that has helped produce this product. As you recall, as he mentioned, this was in front of you last year, and through a lot of work over the interim, we strongly believe that the product you have in front of you is a better and superior product that, again, that we can wholeheartedly support from our membership. One of the provisions of the bill that we think is exemplary is that it provides the necessary transparency and objectivity that our contractor members want to see when the owner, in this case MnDOT, would be making the all-important selection of who that CMGC contractor is. The legislation also establishes a reasonable limit on the total number of projects that can be procured under the method, requires a comprehensive report and evaluation before further authorizing its use in the marketplace. You may wonder what our hesitancy or reticence was to embrace this, and just a quick comment that has allowed us to overcome that concern. CMGC does and will require a substantial change to the highway contractor's business model, and it's most commonly used today in the vertical building market, and our highway contractors simply are unfamiliar with it and have not had an experience with it. It's going to take time and investment for those contractors in order to develop the skills and talents necessary to be successful to procure a CMGC contract. And very few Minnesota highway contractors will likely ever propose or bid on a CMGC contract. They simply don't have the necessary skill sets, personnel, or capacity to take on that kind of responsibility. But it's important to also remember, and as Mr. Raven pointed out, that MnDOT will continue to utilize the low bid model as their primary source of contract procurement, and our concerns relative to the viability of that marketplace were certainly accommodated in our discussions with the department. So with that said, I again am proud to stand before you today and support this legislation in our partnership with MnDOT, and applaud Senator Gimsey for his work and the work of this committee on moving this product forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, any questions for Mr. Werke?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chairman, in order to get the bill in the order that we would like to have it, I would offer the A2 amendment, which covers some of the data information practices and other information requirements that Mr. Raven had talked about, and gets the bill in.
We have the A2 amendment ready here. Senator Gimsey moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion, members? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The A2 is adopted. Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I guess, move that we lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus 2 bill.
Senator Gimsey moves that we lay over 1147 as amended for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus bill. We will lay that over. Let's move on to your next bill, Senator Gimsey, Senate File 2321.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 2321 will probably generate a little bit more excitement than the previous bill, but I think it's an important bill that we need to talk about and certainly have an understanding on. And what Senate File 2321 does is requires the Met Council to increase certain fares by 25 cents per ride, and the necessity for this is becoming quite apparent as we are starting to see an increase in the cost of tires and fuel, and also a downturn in our economy. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's been a significant amount of time since we've had a fare increase in the Met Council. It goes back to 2008, and a 25-cent increase in the fares seems to be a modest increase at this point in time when you take into consideration all of the increase in prices within our economy. just remind folks that at the beginning of the budget session last year, the governor did at first suggest that a fare increase would be part of the discussions, and later decided not to go forward with that fare increase. And just so members and everybody knows that a fare increase was a part of our discussion as we were going through the budget process and how a fare increase could impact the amount of money that would have to come from other areas within the budget in resolving the deficit that we were seeing. And along the way at various times, this was discussed with the Met Council and the necessity for it. And we just feel that now is an appropriate time with all commuters, whether it be and drivers, whether it be in their cars or in trucks or whatever mode, are seeing higher fuel prices and an increase in cost. Certainly a modest 25 cent per ride increase on the part of those people using light rail, regular service transit, and our bus service seems appropriate at this point in time. Another aspect of this is that the ability of for our suburban transit providers, otherwise known as the opt-outs, is directly tied to the Met Council and their fares, and they would not be able to increase their fares unless the Met Council does. Something that my preference would be that there wouldn't be that connection there, that they would be free to operate their systems as they feel that is best and be able to increase their fares. But they are also coming under extreme pressure to keep up with the cost of fuel and the additional cost to them, and we just feel that now would be a good time to move forward with a fair increase. And I would like to offer the A2 delete everything amendment. And what this amendment does really is puts the language of Senate File 2321 in line with the language in the House and makes it clearer, more understandable, and easier to implement on the part of the Met Council than the language that we had proposed in the original engrossment of Senate File 2321. And
Senator Gimsey offers the A2 delete all amendment. Discussion, members? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The A2 is adopted.
Thank
Senator
you.
Senator Gimsey.
And to the amendment, you will see in the amendment that what we are talking about is a 25 cents during peak and non-peak hours for passengers that are not offer discounts, number one, and also regular route express bus service, light rail transit service, commuter rail service, including during the weekdays and weekends, and downtown zone circulation service. But especially to be noted is on line 1.12 that we do exempt service for persons with disabilities, metro mobility, paratransit service, and transit link shared rider service. And what we didn't want to do was to affect those disadvantaged riders or those riders that for medical purposes and other reasons rely on transit to get them to and from doctor's appointments, to the hospital, and to other appointments. So I believe the Met Council is here to testify, hopefully in favor of this bill, but somehow I have my doubts.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for Council. Would this subdivision apply to Metro Mobility, Paratransit Service, or Transit Link Shared Ride Service if this paragraph B was not included.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, if B were not in the bill, would the fare increase apply to Metro Mobility?
Air Transit Service or Transit Link Shared Ride Service? Would folks who use those services be experiencing this fare increase?
I believe it would, but maybe Met Council mm-hmm. could give a different answer. I believe it would apply if the language in B were not there.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe it would as well.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk about this bill. Just to give a little history on the fare increase discussion that occurred last year, Senator Gimsey was correct that there was discussion last year in the governor's original budget bill. He had proposed a $10.8 million reduction to the Metropolitan Council Transit, and then in his supplemental budget, he came back and restored that cut in order to make sure that the council would not have to move forward with a fare increase. Senator Gimsey is also correct in saying that there was discussion about fare increases through the committee process, and this committee talked about that when they ranked different ways of how to deal with the budget cuts that were being proposed for Metropolitan Area Transit, and the council at that point opposed those cuts. You'll remember it was a significant cut of about $109 million of our general fund, and that bill moved forward. It ended up being a conference committee report. It passed the House and Senate, and it was ultimately vetoed by the governor. When we moved to and at that point, the council has to start a process of raising fares and reducing services. There's a six-month federal process that we have to follow in order to conduct a fare increase or cut service. And so at that point, when we were dealing with a proposed budget cut of $109 million to our general fund, we began that process. During that process, we were ultimately able to come to a budget agreement where we took a $50 million or so budget reduction that we had folks from CTIB participate in this, Greater Minnesota Transit participated in this, the opt-out providers participate in it, and the council participate in it. And then as part of the budget deal, a fare increase was not part of this agreement, and for those reasons, the council does not support the fare increase at this point. We believe that the budget deal, as we made on this last session, should apply at least through this biennial budget. And I'm happy to take any questions if you have any.
Members, any questions? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shetnin, is Met Council prepared to provide any? I mean, I do see in the fiscal note the expected drop-off in ridership from a fare increase of this nature. I see the tables and the like. But does the Met Council also, in its examination of these issues, determine the effect on individual household budgets, depending on the level of income, and what happens to folks and their ability to access their jobs and their school and their daycare services and, you know, all the things they need to do, who will now not be able to get to the places they need to go, and the larger effect that has on our regional economy and people's lives?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, that is addressed through that six-month process that we have to go through. We have public hearings in order to talk about how the impacts financially would be, what the on a fare increase and what a route reduction, how that would impact people's access to movement throughout the region. So that is where those issues are addressed. And I know Senator Gimsey adopted the language that the House has passed. There is one particular issue with the that language is how it relates to discounted fares. We have a number of discounted fares that we operate under, that mean like Metro Pass, our go-to cards. There are a number of them, our UPass with the university folks. We've got about 8 to 10 different discounted fares that I think have to be taken into consideration there as well. And but for all those reasons aside, we don't support the amendment because of the agreement that we reached last summer.
Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple of things. The Met Council has the staff and the ability to work with the discount payers like employers and the colleges and those folks. They do this. That's part of what they do. I'm sure they probably have a number of FTEs that work in this realm on a daily basis and are able to work with them to make this adjustment. And it would be probably, in my opinion, a routine part of their business to accomplish this increase with those particular discount discount provider, you know, providers that offer those discounts. And you know, that's part of a negotiation on the business side of with the Met Council that I'm sure that they could accomplish. Also, we do make provisions in this bill and in the A2 delete everything amendment for people with disabilities, Metro Mobility, and other providers for those people that have those special needs, and also that there are discounts that the Met Council, certainly within their discretion, and they oftentimes use a lot of their discretion, could sorry, that was just a cheap one. that they could incorporate as far as people that are financially less well off, if you will, to afford a 25-cent per ride increase. But you know, this is, I understand their concerns, and this is forward thinking, Bill, because when we go through the budgeting process next year, I know that the Met Council will be coming to us for an increase out of the general fund, more than likely, for the very reasons why we are expressing that we need this increase today. Cost of tires, cost of fuel, cost of salaries and wages, and we will come back to them at that point in time and ask them, what about that fare increase that we had talked about? Have you implemented that and gone through the process on it? And they'll come back and say probably no, that they haven't. And I will again tell you that it's been since 2008 that they haven't had a fare increase. Since 2008, virtually everything in everybody's life has gone up more than what this increase would be, which is probably in the neighborhood of 15%. And you divide that over the 4 years that since the last increase, and you're looking at probably about a 2% or 3% per year increase, which I think is again quite modest and reasonable to expect. But what I would like to do is be able to be a little forward thinking, have them implement this increase, and possibly not come back to us during budget time with a much larger expectation out of the general fund, which may again be under some stress to provide increase in funding for them.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The simple fact of the matter is that the general fund commitment to transit has been going down repeatedly, so it's not as if though transit is taking too big of a take out of the general fund, that you know that commitment that we've made to transit has been diminishing, you know, on a steady kind of drip tortured basis. And the truth of the matter is that you know, if we were to compare how fare increases have gone up over the last 10 or so years as compared to how the the gas tax has gone up. Fare increases have outstripped gas tax increases. So if we want to talk about equity, we can talk about apples to apples here and who's paying for what aspects of transportation, who is receiving kind of mandated increases by the government. It's also important to remember that, the legislative auditor's report points, shows it to us, and the advocates have shown us that we have a higher percentage of fare box recovery than most other metropolitan areas of similar size. So it's not as if we've been ignoring fares as a part of the overall cost structure and how we pay for transit in the metropolitan area. And, at this time when, folks are working hard to stay ahead, they have to use transit to get to their jobs and their daycare and their school and whatnot. You're talking about heaping a 15 to 20% increase on their family budget for their transportation costs. It's going to knock people completely out of the ability to participate in our economy just as they're starting to get a toehold into recovering their lives. So I don't know why we're substituting our judgment for the Metropolitan Council's judgment here. Say they've got a budget structure that's going to work. They may come forward with a fare increase request next year, and we'll take that under advisement. Senator Gimsey, even you have to admit, even with all these caveats, there's a lot of people that we're not going to capture. And even these folks who are provided a discount fare, a lot of those folks work for like a Ameriprise. They're paid really well. They're not going to be subjected to this fare increase because they're provided a discount fare, even though they've got good jobs, but they happen to access transit benefits through their employer. We're going to hit people quite directly who can't afford it, and we're going to create a circumstance where they're not going to be able to get to their job at a time when folks are just starting to rebuild their lives after a devastating run here the last 5-6 years. That's what's going to happen as a result of this bill if it passes.
Senator Sharon.
Well, I think Senator Dimmel has expressed my concern. It seems to me the fundamental disagreement here is whether or not we want to rely on general fund appropriations to support transit, or we're going to extract the state's responsibility from that gradually, or more severely, or in a continued way that we have, and put it on to the user. And what's the balance about that? So I think that's a worthy discussion. And I won't say anything more about that. But I wondered, my question would be for Judd and maybe also for Senator Gimsey, does changing the word in 1.5 from shall to may gives flexibility then to the Met Council should they choose to do this or feel pressed to, but not require them to resolve any issues?
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, that does provide the council more flexibility. However, based on my previous testimony, we had agreed that we were not going to raise fares during this biennial budget cycle. As Senator Dibble mentioned a moment ago, as we prepare our budget moving forward for the fiscal year 14-15 budget cycle, we will obviously look at all of the revenue sources we have available to the council before we move forward with a request to the governor and then to the legislature. But at this point, we'd like to abide by that agreement that we had in place.
Senator Gimsey.
Well, and Senator Sharon, to your comments, the Greater Minnesota Transit providers receive a significant amount of their funding through the general fund, and we all saw what happened during the last budget cycle, and a lot of that was because of the enormity and the size of the Met Council's budget request that our rural providers maybe saw a little less than what we were able to provide for them, considering the budget that we had to work with, the targets that we had to work with. And so, I think in looking forward, if we tell them, and we are legislators, we have that authority to tell them to raise their fares by 25 cents, that we can some way reduce the pressure on the general fund and the request on the part of the Met Council. We will see them probably take a smaller share of the general fund dollars or the necessity to do so and give some relief to our greater Minnesota transit providers and our suburban transit providers who saw a tremendous hit, if you will, to their budgets and their reserves. And so I see this as forward-looking. I know they're going to be reluctant to have anybody get within their personal space, if you will, or be involved in their affairs. And but, you know, there is a point in time where we have to be forward-thinking and provide the best options going forward. And with the increase in costs, I see a day, probably in the next budget cycle, where they will be demanding a bigger and bigger piece of the general fund pie, and that's going to do nothing but put additional burden and pressure on our rural transit providers and our suburban providers, our opt-outs. And what we would like to do is move away from that type of an approach.
Mr. Shetland, could you explain to me what you've done? And I know this is I'm just looking for the total funds that are available. What has the Met Council done on the use of transfers, and maybe specifically the inappropriate use of transfers, and how much money we're talking there on that issue?
Mr. Chair, I will have to get back to you on that on that question. I'd be happy to provide that information, but I would have to speak with our finance people specifically about that question. I don't have that specific answer for you, but I'm happy to provide it. And I can speak to one thing, however, when we talk about the Senator Gimsey mentioned the opt-out providers. And what we have right now is a regional fare system where even though we have folks who are using these different modes of transit or different providers, there is still one fare that they pay as they move through the system. We want it to be seamless. And so that is the system that we have right now. We have folks from MBTA who transfer under our Hiawatha bus lines. We have folks from Southwest Transit. We've got our Metro Mobility folks, our Dial-A-Ride folks, our contracted regular ride folks who are able to pay that one fare and move through the system regardless of who that provider is. And that is also something that we'd like to maintain, because otherwise you have a system that is becomes all of a sudden very burdensome to be able to move through the system and make transit work for you.
One other question, just real quick, Mr. Shetland. Would there be an increase in people buying discounts if the fare increased, you know, if there was a fare increase, or is that going to remain constant in that program?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not sure how necessarily that would work. I would not be surprised if we saw an increase in people using discounted fares, but we have a number of them right now. We've got a large amount of riders. We've got 40% of the people who travel into Minneapolis every day to work take transit to work. Many of those folks carry our MetroPass cards, which is a card that they receive a subsidy from their employer in order to take transit to work on top of the fare. So you're talking a number of folks there. We have a U-Pass card that deals with the folks who use the transit system to get to school. We have other college passes, student passes. Obviously, we have a bill that we passed here a few years ago that allows for free rides for veterans with service disabilities. But we also have discounts when a person buys a 10-ride card. There is a discount on that card as well. So it would really hit those people, our cash, our paying customer. They would certainly not get that discount. They'd pay the full amount. But it also makes it pretty difficult to figure out an absolute a fiscal note on this, because we have to take into consideration all those discounted fares. So to answer your question, Mr. Chair, you asked if we would see an uptick in people using the discounted fares. And it's hard to tell, but we have a huge section of our riders who already use those discounted fares right now.
Just Senator Gimsey.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I would just go back to the point that I made earlier. The Met Council has people that that negotiate and deal with these types of issues and these discounts, and they are more than capable of renegotiating them and going through and increasing them where they would be appropriate. And I'd go back to Senator Dibble's comment about well-paid people who are getting a discount through their employer, you know, and also say that, you know, in a lot of cases, the cup of coffee that they're carrying on to that light rail transit car or onto one of the buses costs more than the trip that they're taking. You know, everything has gone up, and people are willing to pay for what they want, and if they prefer to use transit, they will pay for it. And the employers will certainly understand that because we haven't seen an increase in fares since 2008, that the cost of everything, including their costs, have gone up, and that it's reasonable to increase the fares and to bring in those extra dollars and take some of the pressure off of the general fund and all of the positive things that would happen to the Met Council's budget and the opt-out budget by being able to do this. They're very capable of going through the list of discounted providers and letting them know that the cost is going to go up 25 cents a ride. And, you know, so I know that the discussion seems to be trending toward, no, we can't do this, but it's a business to them. This is part of their business model, and they can make those adjustments.
I thank you, Senator Gimsey. I think the point I was trying to make is that we have in here that we're looking at a 3% ridership loss, but I thought there might be an uptick in actually discounted passes, whether they're used or not used. But I mean that there would be an uptick in some discounted passes, but. Mr. Shepman, you had a response?
I did, Mr. Chair and members, and the council still opposes this bill, but what I would also like to speak to is by having the fare increase begin July 1st, 2012, there is no way we'd be able to comply with those federal requirements where we have to hold public hearings to talk about a fare increase. We have to take public input. That has to take place because we receive federal funds through our system. So even with the way the bill stands today, we would not be able to comply with that because we'd be out of order with our federal partners.
Senator Sharon.
Could you tell me what a regular fare is now and what a discounted fare is now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, those fares change. We have different fares for express route. We've got different fares for regular route service. We have different fares for persons with disabilities, for Metro Mobility. We have a wide variety of fares. I would be happy to email the committee the fare structure tonight if you'd like.
Senator DeCry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble, to that point.
Thanks. I just wanted to give folks just a sense of what the base fare is. It's $1.75 base fare.
One way.
Well, that's what, 2 hours or 3 hours?
Yeah, 3 hours.
3 hours, whatever direction you want to go. So $1.75 will get you 3 hours, however many transfers at the time. $2.25 for peak hour, and then $3 for peak hour rush or peak hour express service.
Right.
That gives you a sense of proportion.
Thank you.
Senator DeCry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That helped, Senator Dimmel. I'm trying to kind of get a feel too for what these charges are, and I didn't know, so I appreciate that. I do have a question, and I'm not suggesting that we would probably be able to charge what it actually costs, but with all the subsidies that we put into this, what does it actually cost? What is the average? What does it end up actually cost the state, you know, per person to ride on the light rail?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kreif, the light rail per passenger subsidy has the highest fare box recovery we have in our system. We recover about 40% of the cost of that ride through our fare structure right now, which is very, very high. Right now we have an overall fare collection number of about around 30, 31, 32% of each ride is what we receive back through the fare box recovery, which, as Senator Dibble mentioned earlier, again, is one of the highest amongst our peers in the country. I don't have my copy of the transit governance report by the legislative auditor, but we can certainly speak to those if you would like. And Mr. Chair and members, I do have the fare information up if you'd like me to read it to you real quickly in response to Senator Sharon's question. On our bus, regular route bus is $1.75, as Senator Dibble mentioned, and we've got a $2.25 fare during rush hours. Express bus is $2.25. Our rush hour fare is $3. Light rail, it's $1.75. And then during rush hours, it is $2.25. And North Star is between $3.25 to $7 based on your station that you're at, where you get on. It is determined by the length of your trip.
Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we were, is it fair to say if we were going to recover all of the money, if we're collecting about 40%, you said now?
Mr. Chair and Senator, that is correct on light rail.
Okay, so on light rail, we would have to be, depending on the rate, we'd have to double it or a little more in order to, if we were going to recover all of it.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I think that is true, and we would see a large a drop-off of ridership, I would assume, as well, which in turn that those funds would diminish even further.
Mr. Senator DeCryf.
So it looks like we're adding 25 cents on this. If we were to add 50 cents or 75 cents to try and recover more of the fare, do you think that would really make the difference, that there would be a big drop-off?
Mr. Shetler.
Mr. Chair and Senator DeCryf, yes, I do believe it does. We have information that shows that anytime you raise fares, you have a drop-off of around 3% of ridership immediately. It generally takes about 18 months for that ridership to be regained. So there is a drop-off in ridership that you will experience, without a doubt. We know this. I can certainly have our folks who prepare this information, work in the industry, come speak to this in more detail if you'd like.
Okay. Members, we do have two other testifiers that would like to testify too. Senator Gimsey.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think that the numbers that Mr. Shetland is talking about is probably in an environment where you've seen relatively stable gas prices. Today, we are seeing a tremendous increase. In one committee hearing I was in earlier, $3.75 in Minneapolis today, with projections that we could see $4.25 a gallon gasoline. I think most people would realize that with those types of increases in fuel, that probably you wouldn't see a 3% decline by raising or virtually no decline in raising the fare by 25 cents here. It would seem to be quite a bargain, I think, for most people. But, you know, I guess I would just reiterate my point that, you know, a light rail trip costs $1.75. I can go from the Mall of America to the Target Field for $1.75, and nobody seems to think that that's not a good deal. I guess most people, when they take a look at it, think that that's a very good deal. And you need to remember that they're talking about 31% average fare box recovery. That means that 70% of that ride is being subsidized, paid by somebody else. So a 25 cent seems somewhat modest and probably very appropriate in what we're seeing as far as the cost of using other forms of transportation.
Senator Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm just trying to get my arms around the actual cost of delivering a person on our transit systems. And perhaps Mr. Shetland can help shed some light on this. But I guess as I do the simple math, and please correct this, Mr. Shetland, so the average bus rider costs the system about $6, and the average light rail or the North Star costs about $15 per rider. Would those numbers be approximately correct?
Mr. Chair,
trying to get closer to Senator DeCrife's question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lilly, what I would be more comfortable with is if I had a copy of my legislative auditor's report, I could verify those numbers for you. I would also think it would be better off if I had our finance director for Metro Transit to speak to that. I can speak specifically about the fare increase bill that's being proposed here today, but to provide testimony on the record about how the different subsidies work on the North Star and the other lines, I think is something probably left for someone else.
Mr. Shetland, maybe while we're having the other two testifiers testify, you can get your hands on that information and provide it. That'd be fine. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If we're going to have testimony on the subsidy for use of transit, I hope we have the same conversation about how much it costs to use the roads that's not directly reimbursed by drivers that everyone else pays. We have property taxes and general fund dollars and private costs that are borne that subsidize every single trip that a driver takes down the road. So I hope we have an apples-to-apples comparison here because there's a general sense in this committee that somehow or another we're subsidizing one form of transportation and not another. This comes up repeatedly. The fact is we subsidize transportation. That's what we do.
That's what we do
as a matter of public policy.
Senator Dibble, I was thinking the other day, alpacas. I think alpacas is maybe the only thing we don't subsidize, but I'm not sure. I haven't investigated that because I bet we subsidize them too.
Yeah, don't.
So
too quick.
Would Mr. Reyes and Mr. Rick Myers?
And Mr.
Rick
Chair, Myers? If I could please quickly respond to
Mr.
Senator
Shetland.
Lilly. And our fiscal analyst, Krista Boyd, did very helpful in helping me with some of the numbers. But what I'd like to provide you, Senator Lilly, is updated numbers. She corrected me that the numbers that are in that are from 2010. We have another year's worth of information on there. So if the committee is okay with it, I'd like to be able to come back, provide something to you on Thursday that has that information on it, if you're okay with it.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. State your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Giogo Hayes. I'm with the Minnesota State Council on Disability. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'll be just a minute here. Our concerns were originally about the fare increase. The A2 amendment has addressed those concerns that we had, but since I was come up here, I did want to try and address the small point that Senator Dibble made. You had asked a question about subdivision B there. The original language did exclude Metro Mobility from the fare increase, but it didn't disclude those that have discounted fares. And I just wanted to mention the fact that individuals with disabilities that ride Metro Mobility, when they take their Metro Mobility card and get on a regular bus route, they do get a discounted fare. And then Metro Transit has a similar program for people with disabilities. Both programs require applications and certification from a medical professional that they have a disability. And so subdivision B makes a big difference in that regard. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Is it Rick Meyer?
Yes. Thank you. Peter Rickman. I'd like to thank this committee for letting me speak today. First of all, I believe that there's ways to cut the general operating expense of the bus companies, and the Met Council can lead the charge. One of the ways to do that is to eliminate all stop signs and stoplights on MTC routes that do not meet the standard of having them there. The purpose of stop signs and stoplights is to eliminate or decrease accidents. And so I'll just speak about two stop signs to kind of get a general drift of this. On 26th Avenue North, between Fremont and Penn, there's two stop signs, one on Humboldt, one on Knox Avenue. Both of them are not meet the requirements of those stop signs being there. As a result, the 5F, that goes down 26th Avenue North makes two stops, and then the bus has to accelerate from 0 to 30. Over a course of a year, that's 5,000 accelerations. If we could eliminate 5,000 accelerations on just one bus route, that would decrease the cost of the operation of the bus. And then you look at the maintenance, the brakes, and stuff like that, because every time you stop, it causes friction on the brakes. As far as the fare increases, I would have to disagree. As much as I can respectfully say this, I would have to disagree. And there's several reasons. One is that as a monthly bus, monthly pass holder, I ride the bus very often in different areas, including suburban bus lines, the 5 line. And there's a lot of people that don't carry 3/4, so they end up paying $2 for a $1.75 fare. And I believe the projection of 15.5 million that they would gain by increasing the 25 cents is not accurate. It's probably closer to 12 to 13.5 million. As far as the what I would encourage the Met Council to do, however, is that the seniors' discount rates are different than those that are on Metro Mobility. Most seniors that I know have a disability, but they don't have a disability card. They have a senior card. The problem there is that during non-rush hours, they pay 75 cents. During the rush hour, they pay the full fare. They don't, and they're stuck on a budget, as he pointed out, that they can't survive on. As far as it would be opposite with Met Council, would need more money, but the seniors need to pay less money. I appreciate your time. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Rickmeyer. And I would encourage you to get with Mr. Shetman and share your concerns. And I'm sure the Met Council will look at those. And I appreciate you seriously testifying here today. Thank you.
Ironically, I've asked him for his business card, but he's out of them.
he wrote out his name right there. He's got it all right for you.
There you have it.
Would anybody else in the audience like to testify either for or against this bill? Anybody else would like to testify on it? Members, any further questions or comments?
Sure. What is the author's intention? Is this a layover situation? I would like to...
My guess is
I'd like to be on the record voting against this particular provision.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I believe we're going to lay this on the table. We'll have to look at adjusting the dates based on the Met Council's testimony here today on the dates. Senator Gimsey, is that your intentions is to lay this on the table?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that is. Just lay it over for possible inclusion. Wondering about the date portion of that. Is there something that we need to act on as far as amending that today?
Could we change that to January 1st of 2013? Would that be acceptable?
Is that within the time frame?
I know it's not acceptable, but it's doable, okay? Would that be a better way to frame that up?
Mr. Chair and members,
Mr. Shetman.
Again, I'd like to restate that we would not support that. However, it is within – that would allow for the 6 months of the public hearings to take place in order to comply with the federal process that has to be taken care of.
All right. Senator Gimsey.
And, Mr. Chair,
considering that this will probably wouldn't go into effect until May. I think the January 1st of 2013 is an appropriate date.
All right. Senator Gimpsey makes an amendment to change an oral amendment to change at line 1.6 to delete January or July 1st, 2012, and replace it with January 1st, 2013. Discussion? All those in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion is amendments yes. And a motion is adopted.
Sorry.
All right. So we'll lay this bill on the table for possible inclusion on the transportation policy omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Should are we going to move to any walkthrough? Now we're going to go through a walkthrough on the transportation omnibus bill.
Take it off the table.
Take it off the table. Do we have a motion to take it off the table?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. We have a motion to take the transportation policy omnibus bill off the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? We are taking it off the table, and we'll have Senate Counsel, Ms. Berezovsky. You want to walk through that? You want to walk?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Gimpsey.
Mr. Chairman and members and members of the audience, the A1 delete everything amendment is available, and I would encourage everybody to pick up a copy of that and go through it. We will be marking this amendment. We will be incorporating some of the work that we've accomplished today and tonight into another amendment, if you will, but then we will be adopting that delete everything amendment that you will see on Thursday night to the omnibus bill. So that I would like to have Ms. Berezovsky go through the items which we have heard here in committee previously, and they will become part of what we call the omnibus 2 bill.
Thank you, Senator Gimpsey. Ms. Berezovsky?
Mr. Chair and Senators, in your packets, I think you have a document that looks like this. It's a two-sided document that lists all of the separate bills that have been included into the A1. And as Senator Gimpsey said, the A1 is not totally up to date because there are amendments and things that haven't been captured in there yet, and there were also a few engrossing glitches. So if you see any problems, then let me know. We'll be sure to have them corrected before Thursday. But we do plan to update the document. So I will run down the list of bills and just remind you briefly what is in each bill. We don't have a section-by-section summary yet. The first one is Senator Senjum's bill that was heard earlier today to designate Trunk Highway 14 from the border of South Dakota to the border of Wisconsin as a black and yellow trail. The next one is Senator Dibble's Targeted Group Businesses Initiative, and that amends the Small Business Contracts Program that applies to MnDOT and Trunk Highways. One thing that it does is that it limits eligibility for the preference to 8 years. So a small business that is eligible for the preference can only claim it for a period of 8 years. The language also requires a periodic reevaluation to make sure that the disparity or to judge the amount of the disparity between the targeted group businesses and other businesses and to the extent that they are utilized in construction contracts, and it imposes some reporting requirements. Next, Senate File 1140 is Senator Perry's bill on license plate placement, and that clarifies where a vehicle's front and rear license plates have to be displayed. They have to be displayed on the exterior of the vehicle and either on the bumpers or another place that's designed to hold a plate. Senate File 1147, we just heard earlier this evening, Senator Gimpsey's Construction Manager General Contractor Bill. Senate File 1439 is Senator Goodwin's Safe Routes to School, And this is just the policy language. It does not have the bonding appropriation in it that the original Senate file had. And this is the state grant program that's to be implemented by MnDOT to establish and improve capital infrastructure for safety and to encourage non-motorized school transportation. Senate File 1530 is the MnDOT Construction Project Contingent Appropriation, Senator Gimsey's bill that was heard a week or so ago, I guess. And that creates the contingent appropriation in the event of no enacted appropriation for MnDOT, so that contracts that as to which funds have already been obligated can be paid for highway construction and operation and maintenance. The appropriation would also cover MnDOT employees who are essential to administer the contracts and MMB-related human resources and accounting. The next bill that's included is Senator Chamberlain's sheriff vehicle paint colors, and that adds black and gold to the list of allowable sheriff, county sheriff vehicle colors. And it also allows security guards to continue to use gold if they were using gold before August 1 of 2012 when this bill goes into effect. Then Senate File 1661 is Senator Chamberlain's bill that has to do with state aid for cities under that dropped under 5,000 as a result of the census. Excuse me. And this, we did eliminate, at least for now, the provisions that require MnDOT to pay the debt service for city municipal bonds. And there was some discussion about that. But the provisions that are in the bill allow the cities that drop below 5,000 to continue to receive MSA for 4 years. And it makes up for 2011, where they did not receive anything. Excuse me. Frog in my throat. Yeah. Thanks. Okay, the next one is Senator DeCryf's AMC bill. And this has to do with rules, changes some of the procedures for adoption of local state aid rules, reallocates some fees. And it also directs the agencies to come in with the recommendations to streamline water-related permitting for transportation projects. The next bill is Senator Hoffman's motorcycle road guard certificate. And this would establish a process for motorcycle road guards to be certified to hold traffic during a motorcycle group ride. Senate File 1730, a Senator Rest's bill we heard the other day that would require the Commissioner of Public Safety to provide accident reports that involve where the accident involved state infrastructure to the Commissioner of Transportation. Senate File 1734, Senator Gazelka, this relates to vehicle salvage title and damage disclosure. Changes some definitions. It changes the damage threshold that triggers the need for a salvage certificate from 70% damage to 80% damage, and it excludes airbag damage from computation. Senate File 1860 is Senator Peterson's slurry disposal bill, and the version, you can see it on Section 2 of the amendment. It was significantly amended from the language that was heard in transportation. It went from transportation to environment and natural resources, and they took a different tack on this particular issue, and you see the results. Thank you very much. In Section 2. So it basically says that the slurry is not considered solid waste. The next is Senator Gimsey's Senate File 1960, and that calls for the Commissioner of Transportation with the cooperation of the Commissioner of Deed to study freight rail economic development and submit a report to the legislature. Cost to be paid from the rail service improvement account. Senator Howe's 2131 is next, and that is the design build contracting language for local transportation projects. And it takes a 2009 program, and it changes it by eliminating the project selection council and make some other small changes. The program is to build 9 local road projects using design build and then evaluate the success of the contracting method. Senate File 2166 is Senator Wolf's bill on school bus vehicle standards. And this is a general updating and amending of the applicable school bus body standards and also some specific Minnesota standards. And the new standards are applicable to new buses that are manufactured beginning in 13 and beyond. Senate File 2202 is Senator Nelson's pioneer title and license plates, and this provides for issuance of certificates of title for restored pioneer vehicles that were manufactured before 1919 and used as collector's items and that contain replaced essential parts. Next is Senator Hall's 2230 that was heard by this committee earlier today, and that sets the speed limit on I-35E in St. Paul at 50 miles per hour. Senate File 2243, Senator Peterson's public-private partnership pilot program, and that authorizes MnDOT to consider using this type of partnership for up to 3 projects, and they can MnDOT may consider constructing the I-94 Highway 10 river crossing near Trunk Highway 24 as one of those projects. Senator Dibble's Senate File 2251 was heard earlier today and amended. The amendments will be engrossed in. And that is changing the hourly rates that the State Patrol charges for escort services. And I believe that the ability of the commissioner to adjust rates was taken out by amendment earlier today. Senate File 2273, Senator Howe's junked vehicles bill that allows licensed scrap metal processors to buy junk vehicles from auto dealers and vehicle salvage pools. Finally, the underlying bill is Senate File 2321, Metro Transit Fares, that was just concluded a few minutes ago.
Thank you. Members, questions or comments? Senator Sharon.
Just a process question. At what point will we be discussing amendments to this bill?
Thursday.
On Thursday. I'm going to be pulled out to have a bill hearing in another committee, Senator, so I'll be slipping out here soon.
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, on Thursday we intend to correct everything and get everything in shape and then take amendments to it and then pass the bill out on Thursday. We will work with you on other committee hearings and obligations that you have, though, for sure.
Well, Senator Gimsey, so we're going to lay this bill on the table until Thursday. Without objection, this will be laid on the table. Senator?
I just wanted to thank the chair. This is extremely helpful to roll the bill out ahead of time. Not every chair does that, so I appreciate the courtesy. I'm obviously not thrilled with everything in it, but at least I know I'm not going to be thrilled with on Thursday. I won't be getting super anxious because I will have been surprised on Thursday, so I appreciate the process. Mr.
Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, we want to allow you ample time to digest this, and I know that we want all members and the audience to realize what's in the bill, and it's a work in progress, and we appreciate your input into it.
March 15th. So seeing no further business to come in front of the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee, we'll stand in adjournment until Thursday at our regular time, March 15th, 1 p.m.